Stay and play.
Chapter 2, Murder in the Classroom. Tommy Segovia looked out the window of his classroom and chewed on a thumbnail that was already raw. He had been away for a year, and everything had changed. His home, his best friend, his teacher. Coming back to Chicago that June, he felt oddly like a ghost. His old house on Harper Avenue, in the South Side community known as Hyde Park, had been painted a green that reminded him of unripe tomatoes. The bushes in front, where he and his friend, Calder Pillay, had buried treasures, a rusty switchblade found by the train tracks, a dead balloon filled with bottle caps, a crackerjack box of cicada shells, had vanished. White flowers now puffed outward in a stiff circle around the foundation. Tommy felt sorry for his house. It made him think of a birthday cupcake that had fallen upside down. Even Calder seemed different. Tommy always pictured him with his hair squashed in a straight-up position, fresh from sleep and no brushing, and at least one patch of dried food on his face. Calder's sneakers were tied most mornings now, and he brushed his teeth. He still carried a set of Pentominoes in his pocket, but they weren't the flat plastic ones that Tommy remembered. These were three-dimensional and made from small orange cubes. The pieces felt slippery and looked shiny, and you could almost see your reflection in the pea. Although they were also plastic, they made a different sound when Calder stirred them around in his pocket, more of a sharp clack than a soft clatter. Tommy liked the old sound better. Calder lived across the street from Tommy's old house and had made a new friend on Harper Avenue while Tommy was gone. Her name was Petra Andely. She had curly hair, thick glasses, and small, quick hands. Her eyes made him think of an exotic monkey he had always admired at the Lincoln Park Zoo. He didn't think she'd like that idea, and he didn't know if he did either. They had accidentally collided yesterday on the stairs at school, and he noticed that she wasn't as bony as Calder, and she smelled like lemons. They were all sixth graders now at the university school, and all 12 years old. Their teacher was new and young, and her name was Ms. Isabel Hussey. She had long hair and lots of earrings, and yesterday she had worn pajamas. Tommy didn't think she looked like a teacher at all, but to his amazement, the class paid close attention to her. He tried, but there was so much to stare at and think about that it was hard to do anything else. The classroom walls were covered with newspaper articles and odd quotes and paper footprints of all sizes. Appearing in every color of the rainbow, the feet marched clockwise around the room, just under the ceiling, as if a kid were walking parallel to the floor. Calder explained to Tommy that each time you read a book, you wrote the title and author inside a tracing of your own foot and cut it out of construction paper. Then Ms. Hussey stuck it on the wall. Books were not Tommy's thing, but looking at all those feet made him want to see his own up there, too. He began wondering what he'd read during his year away that he could write down, but he couldn't remember even one title. How had Ms. Hussey gotten the feet up there anyway? He pictured her balancing on the tops of bookshelves and on the tray under the blackboard. No wonder she didn't wear skirts much. One of the quotes Tommy first noticed was on the wall at the front of the room. It said, in black capitals on red paper, "Art is the most effective mode of communication that exists. John Dewey, Art as Experience." Tommy knew John Dewey had started the university school at least 100 years ago. He knew he was a smart guy, but he'd never heard Dewey was big on art. This quote seemed kind of silly. After all, art didn't actually say anything. Another quote said, "All there is to thinking is seeing something noticeable, which makes you see something you weren't noticing, which makes you see something that isn't even visible." Norman MacLean, A River Runs Through It. This one was cool, but hard to puzzle out, kind of like an optical illusion tucked into an illustration. Tommy loved looking at one particular page in every issue of the kids' magazines at his dentist's office, the trick page that had teapots or lizards or fish hidden in a line drawing. He liked the idea of seeing things you can't really see. Tommy knew from Calder that Ms. Hussey and her class had spent most of last fall investigating art. He was secretly glad he'd missed it, until something happened in December. Calder and that girl, Petra, had stumbled on a big discovery. They'd found a stolen painting, a famous one, by a guy named Vermeer. Newspapers had written articles that praised Calder and Petra for being extraordinary detectives. This hurt for a couple of reasons. One, Tommy was a far better finder than his friend Calder. And two, before this, they had done everything important together. If he hadn't been away, Tommy was sure it would have been Calder and he who had recovered the painting, and recovered it in even less time. There was no doubt about it. He'd missed some major glory. And then there was a horrible twist to the whole painting adventure. Just over a year ago, Tommy's mom had met and married a man who had been the reason the three of them moved to New York last summer. At first, he'd seemed like a decent guy. That man, Tommy's stepfather, had played a part in the theft and then died of a heart attack before he could be arrested. Although Tommy had been told that no one blamed him or his mom for the crime, it was embarrassing that everyone in Hyde Park knew, and Tommy hated the idea that people might feel sorry for them. They had planned to move back to Hyde Park during summer vacation, but Tommy's mom had been offered her old job at the University of Chicago's library, plus a small raise, if she started in early June. Because she was back at work, Tommy was back in the classroom. So here he was, with 10 days left until the end of the school year, and not a lot of time for making things better. He frowned and tried again to pay attention. The class was now looking at architecture. The week before Tommy returned, they'd visited the Sears Tower and Frank Gehry's Pavilion in Millennium Park. They hadn't agreed yet on whether either structure was a piece of art. Ms. Hussey asked lots of questions like, "Is a building a piece of art when you can't see all of it at the same time? Can a building be a piece of art on the outside, but not on the inside, and vice versa?" She was usually calm and curious, but on this particular morning, Tommy thought she'd gone a little crazy. She was holding a newspaper article in her hand and hardly seemed to notice that the class was in front of her. Shaking her head slowly, as if whatever she was thinking about was impossible to believe, she said softly, "Plunder in the name of salvation." Then she repeated it, spitting out the syllables as if they were something disgusting that had gotten into her mouth. All rustling and chair squeaking stopped. She waved the article at arm's length. Her voice now dangerously cheerful, she added, "Or perhaps a better term is murder." The class was silent. Murder. Chapter 3, Life and Art. Ms. Hussey paced, her arms crossed and her braid flying out like a tail each time she changed directions. Today, she wore red sneakers, blue jeans, and a long black scarf covered with a pattern of noodles. They were either noodles or short plumbing pipes. She stopped, picking up a fresh stick of chalk. She turned it over appreciatively at eye level. She then dropped it on the floor. The class gasped. She always got grumpy when someone else broke her chalk. "There, if I pick up those pieces, will it still be the same piece of chalk? Will I have twice or three times as much? Will it still work the way I want it to?" No one said a word. Was this fancy math she was talking about? And what did chalk have to do with plunder or murder? Tommy had no idea. "Let's try it." Ms. Hussey picked up a jagged chunk and turned toward the blackboard. She wrote, "Life and Art." The chalk made an ugly double line with each vertical stroke. "Well?" Ms. Hussey had her head on one side. I'm not really thinking about chalk, you know. I'm thinking about a house that some people see.